The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Wright Memorial Public Library, Clark County Public Library, Tipp City Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Washington Centerville Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. It's my pleasure to welcome to the program today Sarah Koshel. She joins us on telephone in Beaver Creek, and she's got a new book out. It's called Murder in Victorian Dayton, The Tragic Story of Bessie Little. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
You are a historian, and I'm wondering how this happened.
Well, actually, I used to enjoy walking in Woodland Cemetery to go back about a decade or so. And I was researching on Woodland's website just information about the cemetery itself. And I learned that Dayton was named after Jonathan Dayton, a Revolutionary War soldier. And that just kind of sparked it for me. I had never thought about that before, and I would share that information with everybody. Somehow that turned into creating a blog called Dayton Unknown that my best friend and I still run to this day. And an acquisitions editor for the History Press, he read the blog and then asked me to write my very first book, which was Murder and Mayhem in Dayton in the Miami Valley. And it's just kind of gone from there.
I'm noticing a theme here with murder. Are you a true crime aficionado?
I am. Started way back when I used to watch Unsolved Mysteries with my dad. We didn't miss an episode.
And your blog is called Dayton Unknown?
That's right.
And what kind of stuff do you post on there?
Well, we try to highlight the more unknown aspects of Dayton. So it could be some unknown history, or sometimes it's just simply something like a festival or an event that's coming up that we just want to talk about.
Mm-hmm. And Bessie Little, have you visited her grave in Woodland Cemetery?
We have a few times, actually. Her story just kind of stuck out to me as soon as I heard it the first time over 10 years ago. I felt so bad for her, everything she had gone through.
Do you remember when you first heard about it? What were the circumstances?
I know I was doing research. I heard about that, and I believe it was maybe online. I had read her story. And so I wrote a blog post about it back in 2014.
And who was Bessie Little?
So she was a young lady in 1896. She was adopted, which was a little bit scandalous back then. And she had been going around with another young man named Albert. And Bessie and Albert were a little bit of a controversy because Albert was higher class. He made more money, and Bessie was also a little bit older than him. There were a lot of things they did that went against Victorian standards for the time. Victorian standards were very, very proper as far as dating goes. You couldn't even hold hands or touch each other, and couples were not to be left alone. And Bessie and Albert met a lot in secret, and she was caught by her parents a few times. So it ended up being a big issue in her family. And unfortunately, they thought she was pregnant. And you know how big of a scandal that could be. So Bessie tried to force Albert to marry her. She wrote letters to his boss, to family members, to friends, anyone she thought could force Albert to marry her. And unfortunately, feeling the pressure, Albert did not marry her. Instead, he murdered her.
So we got that right out front. He's the killer.
That's right.
Okay.
I don't believe there's any question about whether or not he did it. All the evidence in the book that you'll read, all the evidence points to it. I don't see any other killer possible.
So it's mostly the story of his trial for murdering Bessie Little, But initially, let's talk about what he did. Let's talk about how he killed her, because that's a big part of the story.
Yeah. So Albert shot her in the head twice, and that's a big point in the defense. He tried to say that she shot herself, but the way that she was shot, not only shot twice, but the two wounds happened so closely together they couldn't tell which happened first. But one of those wounds would have paralyzed her instantly, and the other wound would have killed her instantly. So there was no physical possibility of her shooting herself twice.
And the setup is that she had been living with her adoptive parents, but because of their escapades in the barn, she basically got thrown out of her parents' house and was forced to live other places. And Albert had been paying her board at a hotel and then at a lodging house, a rooming house. And on the night that she was murdered, he picked her up in his carriage and they went for a carriage ride and they stopped by the river, and that's where he shot her.
Yes, that's exactly what happened. He then dumped her into the river and fled. Then you find out he goes home. He takes everything that was there that night, the carriage, the horse, I mean, even the horse. He locks them in the barn at his house, and then he burns the barn down to try and destroy evidence.
And his behavior throughout this, we find out during the courtroom testimony, there's a lot of witnesses. There's a lot of people who heard the gunshots by the bridge. There's people who heard a woman scream. There's people who saw the fire in the barn and tried to help. They thought they could get the horse out, and he wouldn't let them. And his behavior is just so bizarre. And I think the weirdest part of his behavior, he's clearly an actor. He wrote this long letter to another woman right after he kills Bessie. That is so bizarre.
Yeah, and in that letter, he basically implied that he was going to propose to her, to the other woman. And luckily, that other woman had kept several of the letters that he had written her, and that came out in trial, some of the things he had said to her.
Such a romantic fellow. I can see why they were attracted to him.
Well, they said that despite his looks, he was very charming.
Mm-hmm. The book is Murder in Victorian Dayton, The Tragic Story of Bessie Little. Sarah Koshel joins us, and it's profusely illustrated. And I like, this really is a great technique they did on the cover, where it looks like someone has splashed blood on the cover.
Yeah, they love to do a little dazzle on those covers. You can see with the Murder in Mayhem, my first book, that it's a very similar structure. They kind of have a, I wouldn't say a template, but it is somewhat like that. Most of the murder books that they publish end up having a similar looking title. They really know what they're doing, because I've loved all the titles that I've gotten.
Now, I'm going to take a guess here that most of your research you probably found in old newspaper archives.
Oh, yeah. The Dayton Herald was probably the majority on this one. There was a news reporter for the Herald that would go to the court every morning, take tedious, meticulous notes on everything that was said. And then during the lunch break, he'd write a news article. And then he'd go back and he'd do the same thing for the afternoon session every single day of court.
Well, it was a different world. We have these doctors who performed autopsies on poor Bessie. And initially, they thought that she just jumped in the river. They didn't notice that she had bullet holes in her skull.
Yes, unfortunately, they fished a body out of the water, so they just automatically assumed she must have drowned. Maybe she got herself pregnant and she just jumped in the river. They didn't do much research at all. And then they barely looked at her head. But they did discover during the autopsy that she was not pregnant and that she had not been for at least a month prior to her death, which is unfortunately a fact that in many subsequent publications of Bessie Little information, was not something that was shared. Even in my own work, unfortunately, when I published the blog post in 2014, I did not know that Bessie was not pregnant. It was through the dozens and dozens of articles I read for this book that I discovered this information.
There's a photo of Albert, and we can kind of get a sense of him. But there's just a drawing of Bessie. Were there no photos of her?
I don't believe so. Bessie's family was less wealthy. Bessie was actually sent to work at a pretty young age, whereas Albert's family, they all had money, and Albert was waiting on an inheritance that he would receive at his next birthday. I can't say for sure, but I just assume that because picture taking was probably a bit more expensive back then, that Albert's family could afford photos and that Bessie could not.
Well, reading this story, we realize just what a patriarchal society that was. The jury is all men, and the audience, the spectators in the court, were mostly women. They were really attracted to this Albert guy, weren't they?
They were. I guess everyone likes a bad boy. There were ladies that would line up and just wait for Albert to walk by, and they were hoping he'd wave at them or wink or blow kisses or something every day, which is just surprising because I would hear about something like that and I would not like that guy.
Well, Albert, of course, denies everything. And when they put him in jail, he spends a lot of his time reading the Bible and singing hymns. I mean, the guy is bizarre.
Very. I read in the very beginning part, I wrote that he was spoiled. He was the youngest, and he was doted upon by his parents and by his siblings. I believe he fully had a life of no consequences before this. And this might have been the first time he was being held accountable for anything he did.
We had other things that went on during this period that were also unusual and strange to people today. One of them was the study of phrenology. Let's talk about the evaluation they did of him.
I've always been fascinated with phrenology, so I was thrilled when this book had phrenology in it, like when I read the article. So they had Professor Stone, who was an expert in phrenology, and basically, if you're not familiar with phrenology, it's the study of the bumps and movements in your head that would indicate character traits or personality traits, along with facial features. So in one section, they actually describe Albert's eyes as being very small and close together, and his nose having a hook shape and being very beak-like. And they describe him as an eagle, having the resemblance of an eagle watching its prey. So they take just about all of his physical features and say what a terrible person he is because of them.
But near the end, they kind of backtrack a little bit, and they say, oh, but, you know, this also makes him look like he's a good guy.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. It's so subjective, and it's so easy to take that information and twist it whichever way you want it to be.
Yeah, you have Professor Stone writing, the projecting brow denotes keen observation and good general intelligence. His small mouth and well center of lips, a quiet, approachable, and unaffected nature. The curve beneath the lower lip shows good, respectable parentage and artistic tastes, though uncultivated, and occasional spells of repentance, while his clear, smooth skin and clear-cut lines denote an attention to work, good general memory, a fair degree of courtesy, and capacity for improvement, were he not so selfish, obstinate, jealous, and so readily blinded by his passion and spiteful temper. I love that.
He just can't make up his mind what Albert is.
And another aspect of this, I think the one that fascinated me the most, was when they delve into his relatives to try to explain how, well, perhaps he was temporarily insane. Let's talk about the Studebaker family.
Oh, I call that the Studebaker defense, and I was endlessly amused by it when I was reading. So Phoebe Studebaker was Albert's mother. And Phoebe was considered to be sane, but unfortunately, a few of her siblings and one of her brother's children were considered to be insane. And they go into great depth talking about the things that they did, especially Phoebe's brother, John, and his children. Now, John had, I believe, 13 children total, but five of them committed suicide. One of them committed homicide, and there were several more that attempted. It was just mental illness ran in that family, but stopped every couple of people.
Well,
so unfortunately, the whole family had issues with mental health at some point.
You have a family photo of that particular Studebaker family. And as we're going through and we're reading what each of these brothers did and looking at the photos, it's pretty creepy. Have you ever heard of a book called Wisconsin Death Trip?
No, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, that, look it up. It came out about 50 years ago, but it's fantastic. And it's got all these photos of people in Wisconsin during this same Victorian period who were insane, or at least they said they were, and has all these newspaper articles about the things that they did. And it reminded me a little bit when I was reading your book of that book. It's a brilliant book, Wisconsin Death Trip. And when we read about the Studebakers, we're just thinking, a lot of times when they flipped out, it was over money. And it seems like that was the same problem with Albert. Albert didn't want Bessie to get her hands on his legacy, what he was going to inherit when he turned a certain age, because his mother had died and left him an estate, which was probably a lot of money back then. I think it was over $1,000.
Yeah, I believe it was about $2,000. I might be a little off on the figure. But yeah, that was a substantial amount, enough to get him started in life. And the thing was, Bessie didn't really want the money. She just didn't want to be scandalized, because she truly believed that she was pregnant, and she was worried so much about, you know, I'm going to start showing soon. And I think as time went on, she became more and more desperate, because she was convinced any day she'd start showing that she was pregnant.
You're listening to the Book Nook on 91.3 WYSO, sharing community voices through inspired storytelling, and today sharing the voice of Sarah Koshel, who joins us on the telephone in Beaver Creek. Her book is Murder in Victorian Dayton, The Tragic Story of Bessie Little. We know her enough to sympathize with her, but we really don't get to know her that well. It's kind of hard to figure out what she was really like.
Yeah, unfortunately, beyond a short description saying that she was likable and sweet and hardworking, you really didn't get a picture of her the way you got with Albert. There were so many character witnesses to talk about Albert and who he was, what kind of person he was, both positive and negative. But you didn't get a lot of people that would share the same information about Bessie.
Albert also had access to legal representation, and quite a bit of it. He even had a judge representing him.
Oh, yeah. It was common in those days that judges would also be on the other side of the bench. In my research, sometimes the judge would be on the bench in one case, and then in the next case, he was the prosecutor or the defending attorney. Yeah, they didn't have it so much where you were kind of solidified in one role. You could prosecute, you could be defense, and if you were a judge also, those three different places that you could take in the courtroom.
And the jury, they were all men.
But, oh, yeah.
But they ended up saying he was guilty. They had a unanimous verdict, didn't they?
They did, and I don't believe they hesitated too long either. They asked for water at one point, but other than that, they just got in there, they discussed, and they found him guilty.
I'm not going to talk about the most morbid and bizarre aspect of this. I will leave this to readers to discover, but poor Bessie. I mean, gee, when we're reading about this and the testimony in the courtroom and how Bessie was actually in the courtroom, that is so horrifying.
It is. I considered, you know, cleaning that up a little bit, making it less gruesome, but I really wanted to show how Bessie was treated both in life and death. And so I kept that in there to kind of leave the impact of the way Bessie was treated this whole time.
It is truly astounding to even conceive that they would do this. Let's talk about this religion. Was it Dunkards that they...
Oh, yeah, the Dunkers.
Dunkers. Who were these people?
So they were German Baptists, and they got the nickname Dunker because during baptism, instead of dunking, so to speak, once, they would dunk three times. And it was a pretty, I guess, strict religion as far as religions go. They were a little more modest and more devout than maybe you would call mainstream religion at the time. And I do believe that played into the situation. Although Albert didn't practice the Dunker religion, his entire family did. And I think because of that, that played into the impropriety that Albert was displaying and his family's opposition to him marrying Bessie.
Albert is eventually sentenced to the death penalty, and these were early days for this particular form of execution. I think most readers aren't going to feel a whole lot of sympathy with Albert, but maybe at the end, when they're executing him, maybe they'll feel four or five drops of sympathy for poor Albert, because the death penalty was absolutely atrocious.
Yes, I agree. The ironic thing about it was 1896 was the year they switched from hangings to the electric chair. And they did it because they thought the electric chair would be more humane than the hangings. With hanging at the time, there were a lot of issues with, there's a science to it. Without going into too much detail, there's actually a formula you can use where you enter the prisoner's weight and then you figure out how long the rope needs to be. Unfortunately, no one knew that. So people were making the rope too long, too short, and the prisoners wouldn't die immediately. And sometimes they had to be rehanged. So they decided the electric chair would be a quicker and more humane way to go. Unfortunately, with Albert, there were a lot of malfunctions with his execution. I'm going to leave that to the readers to read in the book. I definitely had some feelings of pity for him then.
They hadn't quite figured out the technique yet. My guest is Sarah Koshel. Her book is Murder in Victorian Dayton, The Tragic Story of Bessie Little. And as the women fought to get into the courtroom to watch the trial, the men all wanted to be a part of the execution. I assume these were all men.
I believe so. It was like the entire thing was a spectacle. It was entertainment for a lot of people. Up in Columbus, where this was taking place, the execution part, they were turning people away at the door. They had people there to control the crowd, but even with that, it was chaos.
That's amazing that they actually allowed the public to attend this event. It's just baffling.
It is. Something so gruesome, I'm surprised that many people wanted to see it.
Well, apparently it was big entertainment. Of course, they didn't have television.
That's true. Their entertainment was the newspaper and these events.
My guest is Sarah Koshel. What do you do for fun?
I love to read, as you might imagine. I spend a lot of time with my family at home. We like to go places together. My son loves Young's Dairy, so we go there a lot and feed the goats.
Okay. Well, that's just a stone's throw away from our studios. You come right in our area here. All right.
Yeah, so I love going hiking there, too.
At Glen Helen or things. John Bryan Park? Or?
Glen Helen. Okay. I love Glen Helen.
Okay. And you obviously have a readership here in our area. I understand that you've done some events at the public library. and you've got a following. What's it like to meet your readers?
I love it. I love when they tell me what they liked about the stories, or in some cases, maybe a personal connection they have to something I've written. I talked to a woman whose grandfather was a juror on the Albert Franz story. I actually made friends with Albert's brother, Isaac, his great-grandson, a few generations down.
Really?
Yeah. He's one of my friends, and he and his family are going to be reading my book. They're very interested.
Well, these people have stayed in Dayton for all these generations. That's amazing.
Yeah. It's amazing sometimes when you talk to someone and then you find out how many generations they've been in Dayton, their whole family.
And I expect you probably have people give you story ideas and say, you need to write about this.
Oh, yeah. When I published my second book, Dayton Ghosts and Legends, I got so many new ghost stories after that.
Wow.
And then a lot of people confirming, you know what, I went to Spaghetti Warehouse and this happened, or I worked at Victoria Theater and this happened.
We do have a lot of ghosts around here, that's for sure.
We sure do.
And there are other writers who have written about it. Do you know some of our other local historians?
I'm good friends with Steve Grismer, who runs the Dayton Police History Foundation. Mm-hmm. He's written 3 books. There's also Ken Seary, who's written about World War II veteran soldiers, their stories. And his is a little bit broader than Dayton. He worked with them, and they would sit down and tell the stories. And also Marshall Weiss, he writes about the Jewish history of Dayton.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, anytime there's an author event and I have the chance to meet other authors, I love to.
And then you love having your own author events and signing autographs.
Oh, yeah. That's a lot of fun, too. I really love meeting the people and talking about these stories, and I feel like it brings them to life more.
And what's next on your agenda? Do you have another project you're working on?
I don't have anything confirmed, but we had talked before, my publisher and I, about maybe doing a cold case book, talking about some of the unsolved murders of Dayton.
That would be a big, thick book then, wouldn't it?
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
Oh, my.
I probably have to limit it just to one.
Are you familiar with Doyle Burke? Former homicide detective? Yeah, we had him on the show.
And, oh, wow.
Yeah. If you go into our website at wyso.org, you can track down that interview and listen to it. It's pretty interesting.
Oh, I'd love to.
Yeah. Well, it's been a pleasure having you on the program, Sarah. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed this.
My guest has been Sarah Koshel, and her book is Murder in Victorian Dayton, The Tragic Story of Bessie Little. And Victorian Dayton has no connection to me whatsoever. I have nothing to do with this. Thanks again, Sarah, and we really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis.